Blog Talk Radio.
Life is a three-ring circus with all the ups and downs of a merry-go-round. Going around and round and round. Just ask anybody who lives in Charlotte, North Carolina, or North Carolina in general. We have a three-ring circus in this state. Starting with the House, the Senate, and the governorship. They are the three-ring circus. It's just like Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey. I mean, it's just unbelievable. You go there, you need popcorn, and you need a cold drink to believe the garbage that goes on. But see, unlike Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey, where you go to a matinee or you go to an early evening show, 7:30 or so, be out of there by 10, these guys do tricks at night, after midnight. Yeah, they have their own, again, three-ring circus when nobody's around. They do it to please themselves. And then you have one guy saying, I don't know. I don't know what's in that bill. Could have fooled me, but I'll sign it anyway because Art Pope told me to do it. He's the master of ceremonies. He's the guy that directs all the traffic, Art Pope, in North Carolina. He is the master of ceremonies. So you need to come here to see this three-ring circus. It's amazing. But you know what? There's one thing different. Unlike the Blue Magic sings, it goes, like a merry-go-round, up and down. North Carolina is just going down, down, and down. This is the last word. Michael Lawson soloing today. Thomas Fortberry's out gallivanting somewhere. But we have a full show. I couldn't go down to Booth Theater because they are playing today. The Notre School of the Arts is performing Seussical the Musical. But I had so much to do here, I was going to broadcast from there originally, but I decided to do it from here. And then I have to rush down after the show to get down there by 7 o'clock, but the show's over at 6. So what I'm going to do right now, I'm going to play you. We have great interviews. We have an interview with Father Carl, who is my pastor at my church here in Charlotte, North Carolina, Our Lady of Consolation. And we were discussing Pope Francis. What has he delivered? Or what has he done? What has he given us? Has he given us hope since becoming the new vicar of Rome? We're also going to have an interview with the mayor pro tem of Charlotte, North Carolina, Mr. Patrick Cannon, who is running to be the next mayor of Charlotte. And if that happens, we'll have Harvey Gantt, Anthony Fox, and Patrick Cannon. Some people say he should have been mayor a long time ago. But we'll get into that because we're going to have a part two. This is going to be the first part with Patrick Cannon. And then we're going to have, for your delight, a piece of Seussical Musical. You guys can, everybody, come down and see it. If you're here in Charlotte, if you're not here in Charlotte, if you're close, if you're in Rock Hill, drive down to the Bloomingdale Theater and go to the Booth Theater that's inside the building, and the Notre School of Arts are performing Seussical the Musical tonight at 7 o'clock, $5 for children, everybody under 5, $15 for adults. Tomorrow they're having a matinee at 2 o'clock, $5 for children, $15 for adults. And they're having a Saturday night, $5 for children, $15 for adults. And if you go and ask for me, I'll pay for all the children that you bring. So ask for Michael Lawson, the last word. Michael Lawson, the last word. And I will pay for your children. Under 5. Okay? All right. Let's lead an interview with Father Carl. This is a great interview. Oh, by the way, there won't be any calls taken during the interview, so you'll have to just wait till after the interview is over to call. Okay? In 1993, he ran. Roll on.
This is the last word with Michael Lawson, August the 2nd, 2013. And I am here with Father Carl Del Judas, who is the pastor of Our Lady of Consolation in Charlotte, North Carolina, 2301 Statesville Avenue. And you know what? You need to call and come to this church. It is fabulous. It is my church, and we have a fabulous, fabulous weekly service and daily service. I'm glad to be here again with you, Father.
Michael, it's a pleasure to have you back here again also. Always a pleasure.
I mean, what can you say has happened in the church in general since the end of March?
Looking at it from where I sit right here in this little isolated corner of Mecklenburg County in the city, I see a big sea change taking place. It's a big change that has gone on since Francis has become our Pope. A big change. And I see it myself for the better.
Mm-hmm.
Very much so.
And while you're talking, I'm going to bring out my glasses that I didn't have on, so
sure.
I can't read what I'm doing.
Yeah, I'm like that too, you know. I want you to realize that. There are times I need my glasses.
Yeah, well, you know, I got contact lenses on, and that'll help me with reading. That's just bad news. But anyway, Pope Francis, is he a delight or is he not a delight?
I did not know what to expect when I heard his name mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
I think I may mention we talked the first time about
right.
him when I heard his name was Bergoglio. And I looked up and I said, that's an Italian last
right.
name.
From Brazil.
You know. And if they find out from Argentina,
right.
then I started chuckling to myself because it was kind of a joke we had in my family growing up. That when there's an Italian who has a price on his head, there's two places he would leave from Italy, England or Argentina.
Well, he's been down in Argentina. He's dealt with the junta down there for a little while.
He knows how to handle the crowd.
He
absolutely.
Knows that.
Okay.
Hey, you're talking about a crowd. We have over a billion Catholics in the world.
Just about, a little shade over.
And I don't think any of them could have imagined, just in these short months, it's like a feeling. It's like something has been lifted or something has changed in the way the structure of the hierarchy. I have felt it myself. I can't put my finger on it, but it's not. It seems like things seem to be a little more freer, or we act a little more at ease in thinking.
I see the difference is that Francis is a pastor of souls. He's living his role as a pastor of souls. Imagine a pastor of a church of 1 billion people. But he calls himself the Bishop of Rome.
Hmm.
He is there. Bishop, he is their pastor for that particular diocese. And stop and think, that's what he sees himself as a caretaker of souls. And then knowing what I know in the little that picks up in the news, when he was at home in Buenos Aires, his working and pastor work amongst the people of his area in the city, taking a role of a pastor, caring for them the best he knew how. I mean, riding to work in the morning on the metro or the subway, I think called the metro down there, just going and coming without any folderol, just right to the point, but a kindly person. And that's the impression I got. The church is made up of laws, and we all know that, you know. And that's any organization, any family has laws and regulations, elbows off the table. Say yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. We all grew up with the house rules and such, and every community, even every church has its own particular nuances or rules or canon laws, and we as a church do also. And he's teaching us, at least he's teaching me, by not what is so much being said, but what is being done.
Right.
And he's teaching by living an example, performing an example. I think that the textbook case that showed up was on Maundy Thursday, or Holy Thursday, depending what part of the country you come from. We use those words interchangeably. He went to, I believe, was a youth prison, and he washed the feet of a dozen or so of the residents there, including women, some girls. I think one of them may have not been a Christian. I think she was a Muslim or something, And I think, what a tremendous expression that is. Because Christ washed the feet of the 12 apostles.
Mm-hmm.
Some people think, well, it should be 12 men.
Right.
And that's their prerogative to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And what did he do? He washed the feet not only of males, but children, young people, and women as well. So I think he's teaching me, we have to do what we do to live the gospel of Jesus Christ today.
Right. He said that everybody is God's child.
Yes, I think he has.
He He didn't say, oh, just Catholics, baptized Catholics. He said everybody, Protestants, Arabs, Muslim, they're all God's children.
That's right.
And it doesn't matter to him. He did say, who am I to judge? He said, the thing is, he said that, which was, they asked him about when he was on the plane, you know, what was he carrying in that black bag with his? He says, well, a razor, a prayer book, a diary, and a book about St. Teresa. He said, but certainly not the keys to the atomic bomb. He said, I carry my own bags. He says, it's normal. We have to be normal.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to get accustomed to being normal. So, you know, the thing is that most people will say, okay, well, the Pope is way up there, and we're way down here looking up at him.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't see that. He said, I am walking with you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at you.
Yes.
He says, and you can look down at me when I'm washing your feet. So he doesn't show any separation between an ordinary Catholic, or ordinary Protestant, or ordinary Jew. I'm equal with you. You're not more than me. I am not more than you. And this has to be a completely different approach to any religion. I mean, it's just so different that I think there's a lot of conservative, well, we're talking about Catholics, who are going to have a major problem with this.
I think they are already. I think they are. I've heard stories of different clergy who are, shall we say, a little, or virtually on the conservative side,
mm-hmm.
and who've been right along ever since John Paul II's been his pontificate, and through Benedict,
mm-hmm.
have held, we do what the Pope does.
Right.
We follow everything he teaches us
right.
to follow. And quoting verse and line when it comes to laws and regulations,
mm-hmm.
well, here we have a pontiff who is teaching us by example. And one particular priest has gone so far as when he's with these more conservative people, he doesn't call him the Pope. He doesn't say that word because he says, but the Vicar of Christ.
Mm. Yes.
Which is one of his titles.
Mm-hmm.
And these other clergy go ballistic. Because how can you argue with the Vicar
That's
of Christ?
Right. That's right. That's
and they don't want to say anything.
No. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He met last week, and I'm saying he met. You know, you normally you go to a concert, and the person is already there, and you're filing in to see the person entertain mm-hmm. you or preach to you, wherever it is. You go to church, you're there, and but the person is already there. So this is different. When he was in Brazil, 3 million people were there overnight. Almost, they said it was about 1.5 million people who slept on the Copacabana beach. It was so bad that it was so crowded on the beach that people were sleeping on the cement sidewalks and on terraces of other people because they couldn't see him, they wanted to hear him. When he got there, there was 3 million people. Now, you know, if you ever had the command of 1 million people at one time, it's more than most people ever will see in their entire life. And they camped out overnight.
Yeah.
He said thousands more descended from the city suburbs, pushing out the beach volleyball players and bikini-clad women to occupy the most famous stretch of Sin City, Copacabana Beach. He said the faithful even shunned the popular beach kiosk offering the Cuba Libre cocktails. He said choosing instead to drink milk and orange juice as they waited for the pontiff to appear.
Yeah.
And according to this, a 2.5-mile-long stretch of beach was so crammed that many spilled over onto the promenade, the streets behind it, bedding down in front of the small hotels, apartments, blocks of strips of cardboard, giant television screens of the kind usually seen for rock concerts, stretched down the length of the beach to allow everyone a view. Now, as much beloved as Pope John was, he never saw this.
No, he didn't. And I think key to what you just said is that, well, who want command? Who wouldn't give command to a million people? These people came on their own volition.
Oh, okay.
They wanted to. No one forced them or coerced them. They wanted to be there.
Honest.
Michael, what power?
With no money. And some of them.
What politician wouldn't like to have a crowd of a million people for a speech?
100 people. We got a million. I mean, there's a young man named Stephen Santana, a 25-year-old architect from New Jersey and part of a group of 80 young pilgrims who said, we had to sleep on the sidewalks because there was no room on the beach.
Mm.
Another gentleman from Massachusetts, 76, said that the 76-year-old Pope appealed to the young pilgrims to take what they had learned in Rio and reinvigorate the Catholic Church around the world. Another person said, Francis can relate to anyone. He's the people's Pope, said Vincent Haber, 35, a youth minister from Perth in Western Australia. So these just weren't Brazilians. These were people from all around the world.
That's right, yeah.
You know, and they say, you know, that they have Mecca, okay? When once a year when the people go to Mecca, millions go there.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Okay, they go there and they surround the temple, and they're there for a week. Okay, now going someplace for a week of prayer is different from going someplace from Australia to a place for one day.
Mm-hmm.
One day. This person, he left Australia to go there for one day just to see the pontiff that day.
Yeah.
So there is something that has taken place in this very short time since Easter that has, and I don't know if it can be put in words, what curiosity, it can't be influenced because he hasn't been around that long.
Yeah.
So I would put it more in line with a curiosity and hope that there is going to be there's something that you know you want,
mm-hmm.
but you just don't know what it is. But you think that if you go in this direction, you'll find it. And I think that's what the people are looking. People are always looking for something to help them out, especially spiritually. And sometimes they just don't know what direction to find it. And sometimes you find it in the strangest places.
Oh, yeah.
Like the Copacabana Beach. Without a Cuba Libre, you know. So
and the bikini too.
And the bikini, you know, they weren't there.
Yeah.
He said he returned to one of his principal themes of his 4-month-old papacy to shake up the stiffy church hierarchy and to take the message of Christ to the fringes of society, even those who seem farthest away and most indifferent. I mean, he tasked them with giving the church fresh power at a time when Catholics in Brazil are deserting in droves, either embracing secularism or joining the growing number of Protestant evangelical churches.
Yeah.
So he knows what's going on in South America. I mean, he was there most of his life.
Mm-hmm.
So he's really doing, well, I say, killing two birds with one stone. I mean, he got people from all over the world, but he also came back triumphantly to Brazil, his home turf. And people are, I think that's what people like, that he is showing them he's still the same person when he was in Brazil.
Yeah.
No red shoes, black shoes,
mm-hmm.
carries his own bags. I mean, the Pope Mobile, don't have the Pope Mobile. Matter of fact, the security's gone ballistic because that thing he was riding in, it got stopped in traffic.
Oh, yeah.
And the people were going in and grabbing him and touching his clothes, and he just smiled the whole way, and the security, which these guys are no joke. There's a book called The Vatican. I think I'm going to bring it for you to read it. It talks about the Jesuit guard that guards the Pope.
Really?
And, yeah. It's and he is a Jesuit, isn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, he's a Jesuit, and he wears black shoes. He says, I am no different than anybody else. I don't need red shoes to prove I am different. He said he would rather walk,
yeah.
But if he walked, he'd never get anywhere.
Yeah.
So, and I worry about that a little bit because nuts are nuts. You never can stop one.
That's true.
And as Kennedy said, if a man wants to kill the president, there's no way to stop him if he really wants to. So, same thing with the Pope. And I don't believe we've ever had a Pope assassinated, not in modern times.
Not in the attempt, some years
right,
back.
Right, attempts, but...
But nothing but, has happened.
No. So what do you think, as far as what these people are saying about what they expect him to shake up in the halls of the Vatican and around the world? What do you think that, because we were talking about this over lunch, that, how do you come in and who do you pick? This is just like it is. It's political. It's all political.
Mm-hmm.
This is, people don't understand that politics, I always tell people that the day you're born, you are under political control to the day you die. If you are rich, you're going to have 400 doctors over you in the hospital when you're born. If you don't, you're lucky you're in the hospital. And when you die, you either get a golden casket or a cardboard box. So it's all politics. And even with in religion, it's all politics. So and I believe that... we were talking about this over lunch, that he is looking at over this, and he is a lot involved, well, knowing how to manipulate the politics, because as I said before when we first started, he's operated with that junta forever down there, and if he can operate and get by with them, he can take care of the stuff that's going on in the Vatican or wherever in the church. I believe he can. There were a couple of things that he was talking about to start. When he was on the plane, he gave, and I don't know if you had a chance to hear any of it, he spoke for an hour and 29 minutes without notes and answered every single question. As a matter of fact, the reporters on the plane stopped talking because they had no more questions to ask him. So, I mean, he, his his ranging questions. One of the things he said was that he addressed all the hot button issues about the gay lobby, the Vatican Bank corruption, the role of women, abortion, homosexuality, and his own personal security. He said, and as the Pope said, he said that he will not judge gays and lesbians, including gay priests, signaling a shift from his predecessor and offering another sign that the new Pope is committed to changing the Church's approach to historically marginalized groups. He said, when I meet a gay person, I have to distinguish between being gay and being part of a lobby. He said, if they accept the Lord and have goodwill, who am I to judge them?
That's right.
They shouldn't be marginalized. The tendency is to marginalize, not to figure that they are our brothers. So he also said, I like to add here, he said, there's a lot of talk about the gay lobby, but I've never seen it on a Vatican ID card.
I heard that on the news, yes.
So he is quick and witty, very witty. But he is very quick, and I believe that these reporters have never dealt with anybody like him. Because he gives them the answers, but he doesn't give them the answers that they expect.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't give them the answers that they now can come back with an argument with. So he has walked between that fine line so far. And I don't believe, I think he was like maybe a 10% chance of becoming Pope. They figured no one even thought he would become Pope. And he's like the person that, he wasn't very good in high school. In college, he was too small, and now he's Bob Cousy. You just don't know.
Right.
You just don't know. How has anything, and I probably not, has anything that he has started to do flowed down to the diocese yet?
Well, actually, he did make one decision
mm-hmm.
that flowed down to us, and that's in the Eucharistic prayers that we celebrate.
Mm-hmm.
That we are to include in the Eucharistic prayer. This came right from his office, straight through the chancery, down to this my email right here, on my computer, that we are to include in the Eucharistic prayers 2, 3, and 4, that we offer that prayer with the petition of the saints, and that it has to do with the Blessed Mother, with Joseph, her spouse.
Oh.
That's now included in those two Eucharistic prayers.
Right?
It's already in the first Eucharistic prayer.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted that in. So now those brand new books that we bought 2 years ago.
We got to write them in, handwrite them
in. Write it brand new.
Right.
Spent a small fortune on these new
right.
books.
Well,
now I have to handwrite them there. Well, I use the printing label to do it. I'm getting a little high tech here. But that was the first thing he did that affected us.
Hmm.
In terms of something. But I think what the biggest impact is his being and doing what he is right now.
Right.
He's giving an authentic face to the paper. That's to the papacy.
Right.
He's very real, and he's very open.
Mm-hmm.
And people are looking for, young people, old people, authenticity. This man is authentic. He's not teaching legal tomes. He knows the law. I mean, you don't get to be a cardinal of the church without knowing the rules and the regs. He knows
right.
the books.
Right.
But he is teaching. He's authentic. And he is teaching us by being who he is and what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I say old people, especially young people, in a world of indecision, which is around us all the time,
right.
of multiple choices we have to make every day.
Mm-hmm.
He is showing an example of being a real person, an authentic person, who's trying to teach the message of Jesus, but not beating you over the head with it.
Right.
He's not going to sit down and cite rule, verse, and line. And then maybe push to the wall, but
right.
You can sit down and have
right.
a discussion over
right.
scotch maybe someday. I don't foresee that in my future with him. But he is just teaching like a pastor of a church. Because we have too many people, laity as well as the clergy,
mm-hmm.
who everything is rules, it's the law. The letter of the law is more important than the people involved. And very often clergy, the Catholic clergy I'm speaking about, hide behind the collar.
But don't you find...
he's not hiding behind his red shoes.
Right, right, took off his red shoes. But you know, the thing is, when I went to Catholic school, I never had lay teachers. I always had brothers and then nuns.
Right.
Do you find that some of the lay teachers are a lot more stricter than the brothers and sisters were and the priests as far as the point of the law?
You know, I can't speak to that right in a second.
Yeah.
I haven't had that experience to see the difference, no.
Yeah.
I haven't had that experience, no. But I know many priests who will quote the law.
Right.
I mean.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm unbelievable.
Right.
And there are many lay people who have read the law.
Right.
And they point to it.
Right.
And they can quote it. They can memorize it.
Right.
I have a life to live.
And they're so strict there, they squeak when they walk.
Well, that's the nicest way to put it. That's the best way to put it, Michael.
You know what else he said? He said, the problem is, he said, with lobbies, they work against the interests of the church. He said, we got many lobbies here. Everybody's got a lobby. Got their own lobby. The lobby for this, the lobby for that. You got the gay lobby. You got the church lobby. You got the Vatican lobby. You got everybody's got a lobby. Everybody's got their own group.
They're pushing their own agenda.
They're pushing their own agenda.
Their own agenda is what it is. Not the church's agenda.
That's correct.
Their own agenda.
That's right. Also, he said that in 2005, during the papacy of Pope Benedict, the Vatican issued directives barring from the priesthood men who are actively homosexual, have deep-seated homosexual tendencies, or support the so-called gay culture. Francis' brief remarks seem to signal a sharp difference and shift from that policy. And it's because that, again, you have groups, and we should not have groups. I'm on the board of the Notre School of the Arts, and I was at the next to last rehearsal because they're having a show this weekend, and after the director spoke and whatnot, and I said, you know, might I speak something, say something to the kids? And I said that because she was telling that some of the kids, you know, they were sitting, and while they were on rehearsal, some were drawing, some were sitting down and whatnot. She said, look, you can't do this. We got one more day. You have to be involved with this every step of the way. So I said to them, I said, look, you guys are very good and you're learning, but you have to remember one thing. You have to, it's ABIC, always be in character for the next 4 days till this is over with. You got to eat, sleep, and be in character. And that means you have to operate as a group. Football, you have a defensive line, you have an offensive line. They have to work together as a group. You guys, when you're doing your rehearsal, even though we're not working on a stage, you have to know if you're on the left side and then that the next set scene you're going to be on the right side, after you finish what you're doing, you need to just go back over the right side. You need to think about what the next thing is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that works as a group. That's working as a group. And the thing here, I believe what Pope Francis is trying to say is that we don't need these lobbies because it's working, as he said, against the interests of the church. So we need to have everybody work for the church's interests and not for our own, which you just said. And I think that has been growing in the church. All these different lobbies. We want women's lobby. We want the gay lobby. We want the Vatican Church to be, you know, gotten rid of, and all the money disputed with everybody else. You know, there are things that have to be taken in turn, but lobbying is it working against the interests of the church? What do you think about that?
Yes, I agree with you. You know, people look at it, and everybody has their own opinion. It's great.
Yeah. Right.
How church should be. I mean, go to any pastoral council meeting we have, which is good. Opinions come in, ideas, we float around, we operate as a local parish church.
But you can't have your own facts.
You can't have your own facts. We can have our opinions,
right,
but not our own facts
that's
to support
right.
our
that's
opinions.
Right. That's right. That's
no,
right.
And we're dealing here with the simple gospel message of Jesus,
mm-hmm.
the simple one. And I reference that because I hear so often, you know, and I'll say this, I'm stepping out on a limb, I know we're talking about His Holiness now, but here we have our politicians, many of whom will run to the legislatures, and they will do what they can to suppress abortion,
mm-hmm.
because it is the destruction of a human life.
Mm-hmm.
But they think nothing of voting to go to war, even undeclared.
The death penalty.
They think nothing of the death penalty, and that's a contradiction in terms.
You know,
Matthew's gospel speaks eloquently.
Mm-hmm.
He says, "Feed the hungry," and what is our state doing? Cutting back on food assistance.
Everything.
And that's how can some people say they like the gospels but ignore an entire passage out of Matthew? That's speaking out.
You're not supposed to pull yourself by your own bootstraps, I guess. They say that's what you got to do.
Yeah.
But if you don't have boots,
how can you do it?
Right.
You got to get them first pair of shoes.
Well, but some people say, well, you know, that's your fault that you don't have boots. You know, like everybody was born with a silver spoon in their mouth. Everybody, well, it's just like, and I don't want to pick on
yeah.
Mitt Romney, but he's good to pick on. He said that, you know, I really had it hard growing up. He said, we had to work, and my wife had to take care of my kids. Oh, we're not talking about the $1 million his father gave him, you know, to do that, but he had to live in the basement apartment, which was bigger than most houses. So, you know, some people just don't get it. And, you know, you find it hard to believe that some people don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're pretending that they don't get it.
Yeah.
Because yeah. it's just amazing how you can... How do you say that? You mean you actually believe what you said? It's just like... I can't remember who the quote... But the person one time told me, you know, of course, if you're not in church every Sunday and praying at least 2-3 hours every day, you're going to hell. So I said, well, where did you get this information from? It's a well-known fact. You know, and this was another Catholic. So, you know, it's a well-known fact. But he can't tell you where they got it from.
Right.
So it's because that this is something that they perceive, but do they really believe it, or are they just talking? I mean, I can't remember where the, again, I can't remember the quote, but and I think St. Francis, no, it wasn't St. Francis, He said that you don't, because a child is born in this world, and then the child dies and is not baptized for his die, that child's soul is not going to hell.
Yeah.
I mean, you mean every child that's born got to have a priest standing over him? I mean, come on, give us a break. You know, how do people realistically come with this sort of idea? How do they get this in their head?
I think part of it is lack of information and lack of knowledge. Lack of knowledge. And I say the sad part is, at least I think even today to some degree, most Catholics, I'll talk about Catholics
mm-hmm.
right now, once they finish with their middle school, faith formation, or Sunday school, some people call them, when they finish Sunday school, as of the 8th grade or 9th grade, that's the last time they go to Sunday school class.
Right.
So here they are, adults, functioning in a very adult world, with the formation of a middle school child. How can these people hold a job if they had the skills of a middle school person?
Right.
But when it comes to their faith, and many people are like that, they just don't go any further. And that's the sad part. And certainly as a pastor, as the chief teacher of a local parish, to be able to encourage people, read, study, don't take anything face value. And with many people with access to computers, they can delve into many libraries and some universities today. They're open books. Well, no pun intended, open books, universities. Bad choice of bad word usage, Michael.
Yes.
Learn.
But they learn a lot of wrong things because there's so much out there that's not correct.
Right. And they have to learn to discern that which is teachings, authentic teachings of the church, and that which is somebody else's opinion.
Right, and what you just said, if they left, stopped going to Sunday school, they never grew up past Sunday school. So how are they to discern what is correct and what isn't?
They don't have the skills.
They don't have the skills.
But lacking the skills to discern which is the right direction to follow.
Well, you listen to some of these people, and we're getting off a little tangent here, but I want to, but you get to listen to some of these people. The show I listen to on, and I like it because I think it's entertaining, because I laugh at most of it, at night, 1 o'clock in the morning down here, coast to coast. And they got these people that come on, well, you know, the earth is only 6,000 years old, and we were walking around with dinosaurs, and then you got someone come on next saying, well, they talked about this group called the Anunnaki that was around 400,000 years ago, and they were 12-foot giants, and they're the ones that gave us religion. And you say, okay, someone listening to this that doesn't know any better will be so confused, and they will go out and repeat it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing with religion. I grew up in Brooklyn, New York. Went to elementary school that was on one end of the block. On the other end of the block was a synagogue and a Jewish elementary school.
Yeah.
And you know, of course, and I had to go home. I had to walk past the synagogue and Jewish elementary school, and it was a lot of us who lived in the same direction. They used to be fighting because they get out the same time all the time. But the thing is that you learned, because we would sometimes stop and talk, and you learned that we're talking about the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So. It wasn't that, that there are some people, as I said before, the you hear these people talk about, if you didn't have a priest and you died, you're going to hell because only Catholics go to hell. You know, what about the people who were born Aborigines in Australia? What about the people who never saw a priest, because there were no priests? I mean, God is not a cruel person.
That's right.
If he was, we wouldn't be here. A lot of us wouldn't be here. So he is not. So the thing is, and I believe this is what Pope Francis wants to convey. I think he wants to convey the message that we're all God's children, and that as long as we respect one another, take care of one another, that's all we need to do. That's all we need to do. Respect one another and take care of one another. You know, anything else is fringe.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else is fringe. But and I just got that from just hearing some of the things he said when he was on board the plane.
Right.
For an hour and 29 minutes talking, when the reporters got so tired, he said, "Well, what, you got anything else?" Yeah, right. Okay, I'll talk to the pilot. You know, the thing is, these reporters were so shocked and so unprepared to ask questions. They were so unprepared. You know, they asked them about women. They asked them about abortion. They asked them about homosexuality. They asked about the Vatican. Nothing else. I mean, is that all there is to this religion? I mean, is that all there is? There's nothing else to ask them.
But I think his ability to answer the way he did.
Duh.
Is, my dad said, "Son, if you're going to be a crook, you better have a good memory."
Yes.
Always speak the truth.
That's right.
Don't worry about a thing.
That's right.
And he spoke the honesty of his truth
right.
at the moment. And you can't, I mean, he was there.
He was there.
He spoke honestly and openly.
Mm-hmm. And I think, I don't know what his next trip is going to be, because I believe he is going to be a globetrotter.
Well, that's good. It could be, you know.
I think the next place he needs to come is the U.S. That's what I think. He went to South America, now come to North America, because these people up here, you ain't seen a hunter. You see the people up here. So he's used to dealing with hunters. So I think he could deal with the Rick Santorums and the other people in this part of the globe.
Yeah.
The Vatican Bank, I always think back to Godfather 3 and the Vatican Bank, where the head of the Vatican Bank was ciphering money and giving money out to all the people in the mafia and doing all the political, getting people elected and everything else. Mm-hmm. And I just don't believe it's that bad. But the problem is, though, we don't know how bad it is. And he's not getting all upset about it. He said, "I don't know that much about it yet, but we will take care of it." He is so calm and serene. And I think that's what gives us this sort of idea that everything is going to be all right.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what. And you know, and Pope John gave like the grandfather image and whatnot. He, to me, doesn't give that image.
Yeah.
He gives the image like the father would be,
mm-hmm.
not the grandfather. The father.
Yeah.
Don't worry, everything's going to be fine. I'll take care of it.
Sure.
Take care of it in time. And you just go about what you're doing. He said, and we'll correct it when you're wrong.
That's a good analogy.
I think he's the not the flashy guy, the guy next door that's got the big grill out there that's doing the barbecues and everything. He's got a little hibachi, and he cooks some steak and some shrimp on it and brings it in the house. So, okay, everybody sit down and eat. We're fine. We're eating just like they're eating.
Yeah.
But we don't have no giant grill.
Right.
So, you know, that he it's no pretense.
Mm-hmm. Right.
At all.
Absolutely.
No pretense at all. The thing that stands out the most to you about Pope Francis?
I think what you just said,
mm-hmm.
no pretense about him.
Right.
You know, he is the Pope. He's the Bishop of Rome. He's the Pope of the Church. And he's living in he certainly has moved out of the Renaissance court.
Into
a hotel room.
Yeah, where's this hotel at?
It's in the Vatican territory.
Okay, it's in the Vatican territory. All of Italy is Vatican territory. I don't know the Vatican.
Somewhere within the walls there,
Okay.
He
can get back to the office right away.
It's right there.
He's
right there. He's there. But I think it's his lack of pretense. You know, at one time, when there were living monarchs, and there were people of state and monarchs and sovereigns, the world was like that at one time.
Yeah.
In the sense that was hoping to be that way because he was the territory he had, the papal states. That's changed. The world isn't like that anymore.
Right.
And he's living today with that sense of, I know what it's like, but I'm living my life this way now.
Right.
Sure, he gets up, he gets dressed on Sunday morning, puts the fancy clothes on, and we all look good for Sunday and
mm-hmm.
big high holy days, which is good. But when he gets home, I imagine he probably kicks his shoes off and puts his feet up and has not only the shrimp for dinner, but the beer with him. That's kind of a...
They do make beer, Danny, and Cooper Libre.
Down in Brazil, probably.
Yes.
You enjoy it?
Yes.
But
yes.
The sense of being a regular down home, your pastor down the street. And I think that's why people like him, because he seems approachable. He appears approachable.
Well, you know, a gentleman in Nicolai Esperanza said he uses language that is very easy to understand. And he speaks in concrete terms and talks about our lives and our needs. You don't often get that from the church. Said on Saturday, and what was interpreted as a veiled criticism of his earnest theologian predecessor, Benedict, Francis said the Catholic Church often uses language that many ordinary people find baffling and overly intellectual.
Oh, heck yeah! Gracious, yes.
He said he also told the priests around the world to be creative and audacious and taking the teachings of the gospel onto the streets in order to break down evil and violence, intolerance and hatred. Now, those are very easy words. Maybe audacious, maybe not, but the rest of them.
The rest,
I mean, it's easy. It's not couched in theologian terms.
No.
One person said that at times, he said at times we lose people because they don't understand what we are saying, because we have forgotten the language of simplicity and import and intellectualism foreign to our people. I mean, what can you say?
You can't disagree with him on that count.
No,
he's right, yeah.
He said the church perhaps is too cold, too caught up in itself, perhaps a prisoner of its own rigid formulas.
Those are very profound words.
I believe, this is what he said on the plane. I believe that those reporters were so shocked at what he was saying, they couldn't come up with anything else. Because who has said this before as a Pope? You don't even hear this from the political leaders.
Yeah.
Because they don't speak to the masses either. They don't speak to the average person out there in the street that, look, A, B, and C. They're couching all their terms in political, covered in political ease.
Right. I gotcha.
You know? He said, I encourage them to continue overcoming apathy and offering a Christian response to the social and political concerns arising in many parts of the world. So, he is someone that I think, and I noticed, in the changing of the Sunday missalette, read a book, whatever someone wants to call it, it has, over the years, you have seen it become more simplistic in the words in the book. But one question I have, why don't we say the Hail Mary as much in church anymore during Mass?
Because the prayer of the church is directed solely to the Godhead.
Right, but we grew up with that in church.
We grew up, many
we
of us.
We said that more than we said, the Our Father.
Yeah, but when the changes came about,
right.
The Mass is directed towards
right.
the Godhead, towards
right.
the Father,
mm-hmm.
through the Son,
right.
motivated by the Spirit. So our prayers are directed solely to the Heavenly Father.
Okay, now, here's the thing I want to talk about, because he did make this change with Joseph.
Yes, he did.
Now, and Mary, Holy Mother, is revered in Brazil.
Mm-hmm. And most of Latin America.
Right.
Tremendously, oh yes.
Absolutely. So do you think that he might change this to bring this back in some way, somewhere during the Mass?
I don't know.
Because, I mean, you can't get, I mean, you, every single house in Brazil you go in, there'll be a picture or there'll be a statue for our Holy Mother.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see where he's going to go with this next. You know,
absolutely.
He knows in his mind what he wants to do.
Absolutely.
Already.
Absolutely.
He knows what he has to, what he wants to do.
And so that this is, that's what I am looking for. I want to see what is going to happen with that, because I was upset when they changed that. And it may, because of habit.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I just didn't think it was, to me, it bothered me. So I'm saying now, my gosh, she's coming from a country and a part of the world where she is revered. And if he made a, you don't even hear about Joseph after the Lord goes on his pilgrimage. I mean, you know, he's gone. You know,
yeah.
He's there. But you're always heard about Mary,
yeah.
the Holy Mother. So this, I just want to watch and see how this transpires, because I think that's going to be the next change that's made.
Mm-hmm.
That is going to be part of somewhere in the Mass, whether it's words or someplace. It's going to, maybe not the Mass, maybe it'll be something else. But we'll have to see. Because that, I like it happening, to tell you the truth, to me. Because, I grew up with so much a part of it.
Sure.
And because I asked my grandson, the youngest one, he's at Catholic school. He just turned 5. I said, do you say Hail Mary? And he says, no. He said, but he knows all about her. But they don't say that in school. He said, oh, no, I know Our Father. He says that. I said, Hail Mary, full of grace. And he says, yeah, I heard that. Yeah, because you heard it from me here in school.
Yeah.
So they don't even do that in school anymore. And that seems strange. That seems strange.
Yeah, we, part of our efforts in teaching faith, you know,
mm-hmm.
is that the family
right.
has responsibility to pick up the slack.
Not
the slack.
Right, right, right.
We've got to get down the basic core.
Right.
Of who we are as believers.
Mm-hmm.
But then that we're partners with the family, with the
mm-hmm.
household. They pick up their half, or you
mm-hmm.
might say they've done their share. We pick up our share of formation. So the idea is, the family and the program complement one another in their efforts.
Mm-hmm.
So it's things that we can teach in the 1 hour a week we have.
Right.
A little over an hour maybe sometimes. And the family has responsibility to teach the other part.
Right. It's like, I'm learning how to drive, so I'm going to go to class today, but I don't get in the car for the rest of the week.
It don't work like that.
Right.
You got to do every day.
Absolutely.
And the family is
right.
6 days a week.
Right.
Unfortunately, faith
right.
formation, Sunday school, that one morning a week.
Right, yeah. Right, 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 right.
Maybe an hour if we're lucky.
Right, right,
yeah.
Right. Well, I want to thank you for this visit, and we're going to have some more, because I am telling you this is going to happen.
I don't doubt that.
Mary is
we'll
coming down the line.
We'll see, Michael.
This is Michael Lawson, August the 2nd, 2013. The last word. Good night.
Well, that was a great interview with Father Carl. Al Greater Constellation, and we will have more from him from time to time to find out where the Pope is going with his directives. And I used to say Hail Mary for the grace all the time in school, more than we say to Our Father. But, you know, the church, as Father said, they wanted to be directed to the head of the church. But let's see, because down there in Brazil, in South America, they say it more than anything. Well, anyway, we have another interview that is really, really, really going to really bring home where we are. And I set this interview up because I wanted to have this gentleman to really express who he really is. He is the mayor pro tem for Charlotte, North Carolina, Patrick Cannon, and he is running for mayor of Charlotte, right behind the great Anthony Fox. I think you'll enjoy this. This is the first part of a two-part interview with Patrick Cannon, Mayor Pro Tem of Charlotte, North Carolina. In 1993, he ran for a district seat on the Charlotte City Council and won as the youngest member of the body to ever get elected to local public office. He won three more elections to that district seat in 1995, 1997, and 1999. After making dramatic changes to District 3 and getting a budget approved for the necessary millions to complete division of the district, he decided to retire from public service to focus on his family and business. His passion for Charlotte and encouragement from supporters called him back to public service in 2001, and he ran for an at-large seat on the city council and was elected by the people and his peers to become the mayor pro tem. Re-elected in 2003, 2005, 2009, and 2011, he now continues to serve in that capacity to this very day. It's a conversation with Mayor Pro Tem Patrick Cannon.
Brother Lawson, how are you this day?
How are you?
I'm doing fine, man. I hope you are, and indeed a delight and an honor to be with you on your show.
Well, since I spoke to you and I told you all about my problems, medical problems, it has now, I hope, knock on wood, being cleared up.
Right.
But you have given so much to Mecklenburg County. And, well, yeah, Charlotte, and, yeah, you know, Mecklenburg County is nothing without Charlotte.
Right.
So when I say Mecklenburg County, I'm saying that's the overall arching
yes.
portion of Charlotte. What would possess you to say that you, after doing so much, you decided not just to sit down when most people said, you could have ran for mayor and been the first black mayor of Charlotte.
Well, after Harvey Gantt.
Well, I'm sorry. You know, I wasn't here when Harvey Gantt was here.
Yeah.
So
I would have been the first to you.
You'd be the first to me.
Right. Right.
Right. Right. I forgot
that
Harvey.
That would be true then.
That's true.
Yes.
That's true.
Yes. But what possessed me to actually want to run for office?
No, I mean, back in the day, when that's right, when you said, hey, I'm walking away. I got families and
right.
businesses to take care of. I mean, but I know people were telling you, hey, listen, you can run. You can be mayor.
Yeah. Well, you know, back in 1993, when I was then 26 years old, I didn't even have an interest in politics, to be honest with you. I had no interest whatsoever. I was fine doing what I was doing, where I was doing it, how I was doing it.
Right.
And it just so happened to be, I was over at Hickory Grove Elementary volunteering for my company. And I just felt like I wasn't doing enough. I was a mentor and a lunch buddy for a couple of
years. My youngest daughter was supposed to go to that school because I just had a house built around the corner from there on Charette Court.
Yes.
And because I think Hickory Grove Elementary was being built the same time I had my house built, 86 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But so, you know, and she was supposed to go there, but they decided to go to Northwest School of the Arts.
Okay.
And but that was a brand new school, and it was one of the modern elementary schools.
Very nice school.
Yeah.
Very nice. Mm-hmm. So I was working on the east side at that particular time for GE Capital.
Right.
And as I was saying, I felt like I wasn't doing enough. I felt good about what I was doing, though, with some of those kids over there because I asked them to put kids with me that were a lot like me.
Right.
And you might say, well, what kind of kid were you? Well, I was one that grew up in a single-parent home. We weren't privileged by any stretch of the imagination. I know what it is to be able to wear jeepers and hush puppies and have my peers laugh at me and joke on me and so forth and so on back in the day. But my father, I don't mind saying this, was murdered when I was 7 years old. And it was just my mom and me.
Where were you living then?
We were in the Pine Valley community.
Okay.
I was born in 1966 at then Memorial Hospital, now Carolina's Medical Center. And then from there on over to Fairview Homes, 1000 Oakland Avenue, apartment 3. Where we lived in public housing at that particular time. And I guess, you know, some people say, wow, you've gone from public housing to public office.
Well, how was public housing back then in 93?
Public housing back then was great.
Yeah.
Fairview Homes, in as much as people would probably link something negative to public housing, was a very nice place to live. People kept their, if you want to call it a yard, they kept, I'll call it a space. They kept their space up and people were proud to be where they were, and it wasn't until the latter years where illegal drugs started filtering into those communities that it began to sort of go on a downward spiral. Right. And as a result, it got a little worse, like many of our communities might get if they get a taste of that kind of stuff. And so from there, we moved to Pine Valley, which at that point, Michael, they had the federal government had something called the Turnkey 3. These Turnkey 3 key developments were the type of communities where they were single-family dwellings. They weren't like apartments that you would normally see in public housing throughout the country. But they were single-family dwellings, and I had a place that I could call home that my mom was able to find for us.
And so you mentioned something about you grew up with a single parent. And today's, I don't call them Republican, regressive party always tries to put a spin on that, that, you know, the problem today is one person in the home.
Right.
I mean, and you're a proof of that. It's not negative.
No, it's not.
It's not negative.
It's not where you're from.
They just have to do things double as hard. It's double hard for them, that's all.
Well, you know, if you have a good foundation in your home,
right,
and all you need is one, I found that out. You don't need
absolutely
two.
True.
Two is that's great.
It's two
nice
is
to
good
have.
Yes.
But I will tell you, if you have one person in that home in the way of a parent or a guardian who allows you to be exposed, who lets you know that you're the victim of your own circumstance, good, bad, or indifferent, it's just about just applying yourself, you can make it.
Okay.
And I will tell you that that's one of the reasons why I think I'm serving in the leadership capacity that I am today, because I wanted to defy the odds.
Right.
And it's always been in my life, Michael, it seems like it's always been a fight. I've always had to fight against somebody telling me I'd never go anywhere or do anything, or the idea that I was too young when I first ran for office in 1993, even though we won by a landslide, the idea that we couldn't win at large, the idea that even now, that somehow or another we can't be mayor. But guess what? We're going to put our best foot forward. We're going to continue to make sure people know who we are, what we've done, and what we can do to move the city of Charlotte forward.
Well, you know, you say that, people were telling you couldn't do anything, and you were a product of Charlotte Mecklenburg school systems, and you attended Irwin Avenue Elementary, Piedmont Middle, Carmel Middle, South Mecklenburg High, and then you got a degree in communications with a business minor from North Carolina A&T University. Who are these people that tell you you couldn't do anything?
Well, believe it or not, some of them were teachers. Some of them were people in the community. Typically, what happens is that, you know, when you find people who are jealous of you, who are envious of you, or have some level of hate for you, for no reason at all, they want to do anything they can to try to put a hurdle in front of you or walls that you can't get through. But guess what? You can make it through, regardless of that, and I'm a testimony to that.
Absolutely correct. And when you got on the city council, as at 26 years old.
Right.
I mean,
I'm still pinching myself.
Who was the mayor pro tem?
At the time, I believe it would have been Ann Hammond.
Mm-hmm.
No, you know what? Ann was rotating off, and Pat McCrory was mayor pro tem at the time. He was serving in a at-large capacity. Mayor Richard Venroot was mayor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Pat McCrory would have been the mayor pro tem at the time. You're governor now.
Well, not my governor. Well, he's my governor by, you know, right, that's right. What do you see as the difference between the city council, how it operated when you first got on, and today?
I think I see, you know, then we had a group of people, even though we were of different party affiliations, you had people pretty much working together collectively for the betterment of Charlotte. And until you get a board that becomes directed on maybe one or two issues,
mm-hmm.
and not the total of
right.
what Charlotte needs to be able to survive and function by, then and only then can you have problems. But for the most part, overall, we still have been able to work together, I think, for the common good of the city. The question has become, how do you get to the place where we would all like to arrive in a way that's practical?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes it's not always practical. You got to remember, I'm a businessman, so I'm going to do something. I'm going to try to do things in a practical
right.
way, the same
right.
way I would do it in my household or
right.
your household.
Right.
You can't spend any more than what you can afford to.
Right.
So, why should you?
Well, I'm going to get back to that point you want to say, but so when did you meet Mrs. Cannon, Trina?
You know what? Trina was actually a student like I was at North Carolina A&T State University.
Uh-huh.
But you know what? God is good.
All the time.
I didn't get a chance to meet her there.
Oh.
Because I didn't need to.
That's right. It wasn't the time.
It was
not the time.
And I saw her from afar. And Michael, I'm like, okay. Who is that?
Oh, she was a lot smarter than you then.
She was standing way off, right? And so I asked my friend, I said, who is that down there? You know, I could see, but I had a problem with my vision at the time. I was nearsighted, so I couldn't see things, you know, far away. So, long story short, I ended up I was invited to something that Larry Johnson,
mm-hmm.
former basketball player,
right.
was having. And some of my guy friends wanted to go and hang out, so we hooked up and we went out that evening, and I knew they wanted to go. I'm not a party guy. Never have been.
Mm.
Well, A&T is like a resort.
Right.
So if you went there, you kind of after that, it's
yeah.
kind of old school stuff.
Right,
so
right.
You just don't care for it. So I basically got them in the event. I left back out, and I noticed that she was standing outside.
Mm.
Apparently, she had gone with some of her girlfriends, and that wasn't her atmosphere either.
Huh. Okay.
And so I started walking toward her. And she had this look like, oh, no, not another place. Right? And so I said, so pardon me, but what's your name? And so I asked her her name, she told me her name, and she eventually allowed for me to be able to get a phone number from her,
mm-hmm.
but it was only after she realized that we had something in common, which was North Carolina A&T State
University. Okay.
And from there, our first date happened to be church.
Okay. Well, you know, that's something, because I know, I'm on the parish council of Our Lady of Consolation.
Yes.
And I know your family. Your mother goes there regularly.
And my grandmother and grandfather were charter members.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, is that the church you went to, or where did you go?
We went, we were at a non-denominational church
mm-hmm.
at the time, and then we would frequent Our Lady of Consolation
right.
Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
But she happened to, when we met, now she was 2 years younger than me, so she would have been 24 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I met her in 93.
Okay.
So when I met her in 93, I also ran for office in 93.
Ah, okay.
So it's kind of like she was always there at the time.
Right.
And I'm glad she was there at the time, because, you know, in this arena, sometimes you just don't know who might want you and
that's
love
right.
for you.
For you and not
for
right.
the position itself.
Absolutely.
And I can't say that neither one of us knew exactly all of what we were getting into
right.
when we ran. But we know more so today what we are in, and it's about trying to help somebody to help themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been with me the whole time, just as staunch of a supporter as one could possibly imagine, and I'm really thankful for that.
So how many years is that now?
15, it'll be 16 years
mm-hmm.
Coming up.
Okay, very
yeah.
good. Now, the thing is that, what were you doing to get paid.
Why are you ready? Because they only give you $1.98 to run for city council.
That's true. You know, prior, I mentioned I was with GE Capital.
Right.
And after that, I kind of felt like I really needed to do something different because mm-hmm. there was no way I was going to really be able to maintain working for corporate America.
Right.
Trying to serve on the city council.
Right.
You know, you have to get selections.
Little here. Conflict of interest it's almost, right?
Almost.
Yeah.
You know, some companies and corporations will give their governing officials a scholarship, if you will.
Oh, you're talking about Pat McCrory?
I'm saying.
Mr. Duke Energy?
I didn't have the luxury. That's all I can say. And so that's when, though, I went and got my first taste of what it would be like to be an entrepreneur.
Right.
And I started a resume company.
Mm.
Because I saw a huge need then of a lot of people who were looking for opportunities. And I knew I had a gift for being able to kind of put words together
right.
in a way that they said something and they could get you in the door
mm-hmm.
For an opportunity. Now, the rest would be up to you to tell yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what I was doing up until I started my own company in parking management.
Mm-hmm.
And so today I own a parking management firm called Easy Parking.
Mm-hmm.
We manage parking deck facilities and surface lots for colleges, hospitals, sports franchises. Anyone probably with a piece of dirt or concrete somewhere that we can go in and help.
Right.
We do functional design
mm-hmm.
with regard to it. And it's blue collar and white collar.
Right.
That's why I really love it because I'm a blue collar kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
My mom was a blue collar person having to work at Fruithof and put together trailers and stuff that you
right.
see going down and up our highways.
Mm-hmm.
But I just have a love for blue-collar folk, which is something that we'll talk maybe about a little bit later on
mm-hmm.
in the show. But
mm-hmm.
So there's a heavy side on that, and then there's a white-collar side with accounting and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that's what I do, and we use the company not just to hire people where we can hire people, but we also utilize the company to be able to give back to our community.
So you didn't start Easy Parking back in 93.
I started it back in 1998.
Oh, 98. Okay. So
so we struggled for a while,
right.
for a long time, because a city council salary is something that you can survive off of.
Do you think?
So we really found a way to be blessed in between time. So in as much as I was able to do the resume company, I did take on an opportunity with American Products with Ray Kennedy. That really got me spruced up and wanting to understand how to run and operate my own company, because he's a business entrepreneur here,
mm-hmm.
both he and his wife. They run daycares and American Product Distributors. They provide inkjet toner cartridges and paper supply, among a host of other things.
Mm-hmm. On the economic development side, what sort of, before you're at this point right now, what did you see or did you think of how to economically develop Charlotte? Did that cross your mind back in 93, or was that something that came down the line later?
No, you know, as I was saying back about Hickory Grove, I felt like I wasn't doing enough.
Mm-hmm.
I started going to different parts of our community
mm-hmm.
and just telling folks, pretty much who live in these fragile and threatened areas like
right.
I may have grown up in. I said, you know what? I know you don't know me from Adam, but if there's anything that I can do to go and speak on your behalf to mayor, city council, county commissioner, school board, to try to change the condition of what you're going through economically, socially, and physically over here, let me know. I'm more than happy to do that. The first neighborhood that took me up on it happened to be my own. Park and recreation used to be a part of public housing.
Right.
Eventually they would leave.
Leaving.
That in turn would allow for youth to get involved in what? Mischief.
Right.
And it wasn't a good thing,
mm-hmm.
and I knew that, reckoned with it, and I worked to be able to set up an opportunity to create a partnership between the Harris YMCA
mm-hmm.
and the Pine Valley community. It gave the youth there an ability to be able to, one, get some educational things done for them, and to have some recreational opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
That's important, and
mm-hmm.
it was a good fit, went on for a very long time, and matter of fact, that relationship is looking to be sewn back up again again today. So
mm-hmm.
hopefully that will transpire, because if our children are our future, which I firmly believe that they are, we need to make sure they have every opportunity to experience different outlets out there to give them some alternatives rather than some of these negative things that can't come into these communities.
Tell us something about the minority and women business entrepreneurs.
All right. Well, you know, we had a program called the MWBE program, Minority Women Business Entrepreneur Program.
Mm-hmm.
That program, in the wee hours of the morning, was nixed. I remember...
Well, by who?
By the city council.
City council.
And we were going back and forth in this big fight with the attorney and with each other as members of council and with the mayor, then that was Mayor McCrory, about getting rid of this program.
Well, so what was the reason why they wanted to get rid of it? You figure something like that, I mean, hey, come on.
Well, yeah, it's something that creates an opportunity for women and minorities to have an ability to gain...
And that's all women. That's just not minority women.
No.
See?
Yeah. And so there's this entity that goes around the country dismantling MWBE programs.
Really?
It's called the Southeastern Legal Foundation, I believe, or Southeastern Foundation. But they basically would go around the country and dismantle MWBE programs.
Is it connected to Alex in any way?
And so they made their way to Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here is what I knew that we could have done, but the council opted to not do it because, for whatever reason, they believed that we were going to be in some kind of situation that was going to get us sued, the taxpayers sued. No. Let me tell you what we could have done. All we had to do was maintain the program, take it to a court, and allow the court to declare a ruling. Just like they did with Atlanta, and just like they did with Chicago.
Okay.
They tried to do the same thing to those cities. They took it to a court. The court said, you know what? No, you can't do this. And as a matter of fact, you need higher goals that need to be set and met for women and minorities to be able to have some business opportunities where they too can go and employ others, also expand their business. I mean, why would you want to get rid of something that's helping you with your tax base?
Oh, well, we're not even talking about the voting rights yet. So
Because it's something beyond that.
That's right.
Now, the
it's something beyond
that was being used at the time, Michael, was that Caucasian women were getting these contracts and legitimately they weren't minority companies. That's what was being said.
Oh, that's what it is. Okay.
Follow me? Okay. But folks would say that there's probably something else that was underlining that was there. Now, be that as it may.
So they would rather throw the baby out with the bathwater, right?
And that's what happened.
Right.
Baby goes out with the bathwater.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And we have a program that exists no more.
Right.
In 2009, I worked in concert with another member of the council to bring back the MWBE program. Today is called the Business Inclusion Program.
Mm-hmm.
And women and minorities now, once again, have an opportunity to be able to get opportunities.
So how is... so no longer they're saying, well, white women are getting this and minority women are not getting it. So we need to get rid of it. Has that been said again?
No, it has not.
See, I wonder why.
It hasn't.
Because it's working.
And women, for the most part, women are doing well with this program and outside of this program, even in the private sector, they're doing well. There's been a greater concentration on MBEs. Those typically are going to be your African-American men or your Asian men and your Hispanic men that are out here where there still has been some level of a discrepancy in terms of opportunity. So hopefully those numbers will improve and people across the board, whatever color they might be, they'll be able to assume some gainful opportunities.
How can women... And, minority women in this Charlotte Inclusion Program, how can they find out information or get involved with that?
Yeah, they can call 704-336-7600.
Mm-hmm.
And when they call that number, ask for Nancy Rosato. She is in the Neighborhood and Business Services Department.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, that number is 704-336-7600. Nancy Rosato, and also if you're a small business and you want to just kind of find out what might be available to you in the way of capital, because you know we have some problems sometimes with small businesses having access to capital.
Right.
go to charlottebusinessresources.com. Again, www.charlottebusinessresources.com. Going to that website, this is a web portal that we, the City Council, instituted for small businesses so that they could have, as I mentioned a moment ago, access to capital. If they want to start their own business,
well, that's what I was going to ask you next.
Do that,
right.
They can go there. This will give them play-by-play of how to start their own business, if they currently have a business, how to stay in that business, how do you maintain yourself in that business. You will find so many resources there. It's really, I mean, it'll make your head
spin. Well, you know, and I didn't want to get off on it, but you see, you bring up such an important issue here about starting your own business. A lot of people want to do something, but they don't know what they want to do.
Exactly.
Can they use this entity to see and ask, hey, I want to do something, but I don't know, and I don't have any money. Is bringing a page idea. Maybe I want to do this or something. Will somebody help them?
Brother Lawson, this will absolutely help them if they go through this process. It will help them to drill down, yes, on where the fit is.
Right.
Because sometimes we see so many different things out here, and people just today, you know, will do almost anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's some get-rich schemes out there, and then there's some that aren't so much of a scheme.
Right.
But find a way to drill down, and let me just say this. If you're thinking about starting your own business, one, have some idea about what it is, but two, sit back for a moment in your seat and just say, what is it that I don't see folk that look like me happen to be in? Especially on the distribution side. Find things that are disposables. Okay? Why would I suggest disposables? Because if you dispose of something, somebody else has to have it back again in another time, right?
That's right.
It's like a diaper.
That's right.
It's like a syringe.
That's right.
It's like those things they pull you, the palate of your tongue down.
Right.
Right, they throw those things away.
As they say, in the comedy routine, an ah stick.
Think about things in restaurants. What do they need in there all day long that you could probably tie into? Straws, napkins. You'd be surprised at how much of an opportunity exists on the distribution side of things if you try to pursue something like that. So look at disposables as a means. I looked at the parking business largely in part because one, there's not a whole lot of African Americans in this business that have bona fide companies.
Right.
And what I mean by that is a company that actually does do the business and is not a company in name only.
Right.
Using your minority status as a means to get business.
Mm-hmm.
That is not what you want to do, because people will use you if you allow them to do that. They will pick you up and say, you know what, we need some minority representation here. Can you come and join us? And you say, yeah, sure, I'll do that. But when you do it and they get tired of you, and they drop you, then there's no more milk, there's no more bread, there's no more butter.
That's right.
Be conscious of that thing and learn.
And old shoes thrown out.
That's exactly right. Learn your business and work your business.
Now, you get one of the most favorite things that I was involved with, and I got involved in, I think, maybe the first three meetings of the Citizens Review Board.
Yes.
And we have a meeting. I remember sitting out, you were there. There must have been, 50 people. It was a round circle of room. I can't remember where it was given. I thought it was downtown, but it was a group of community people sitting down discussing if they did, how the Citizen Review Board would work. And I remember I went to about three meetings, and I saw that it was going in a real good direction, and then I got tied up in other stuff, and I couldn't stay on that, but we got a major problem with this now. I mean, whether or not it's perceived to be a major problem, and it is by a lot of people, that you could have, 1,500 police intrusions, and you only get three or four that are deemed to be done wrong. There's a major problem there, because nothing is 100%.
True, and I think you have to. And let's talk about how we got to where we are. Back in the '90s, it's not all police,
right?
But it's typically just a few bad apples.
Absolutely.
In the barrel.
Absolutely.
That cause.
Well, they're the ones that are causing all the incidents.
Right. They
the same group.
Right. So I want to make sure that I'm clear when we talk about our police who serve and protect us.
Mm-hmm.
The vast majority of our police officers are doing an exceptional job.
Absolutely.
Who care a lot about this community.
Absolutely.
And the community surrounding Charlotte. And will give you their left and right arms.
Excuse me, not cutting you off. I have never met, never one time, have I ever met a police officer who was disrespectful and didn't want to help, because there was a few times my daughter's car got stuck and whatnot, and she didn't have her cell phone. He called me to come out and say, your daughter's stuck. So, I mean, they go beyond. In most cases. And we're only talking about, as you said, a few. And they're the ones where the cases are involved with.
Who don't want to go beyond.
That's right.
Who want to see it from here to right there.
That's right.
And that's where we had a problem in
yes.
the early 90s in Charlotte.
Right.
And I had brought up the Citizens Review Board because when we were going through this, I would go to conferences.
Mm-hmm.
And I would study best practices
right.
on what was happening in other cities
mm-hmm.
with regard to dealing with police misconduct.
Right.
And it was through my conversation with a mayor out of Virginia Beach, Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And I began to have some conversation with her among some other mayors. I was councilman at the time, just representing Midwest and Southwest Charlotte. And I came back with a ordinance for a Citizens Review Board.
Right.
Now, mind you, it had all the teeth in it that it needed to have
right.
to be an effective board.
Mm-hmm.
All right. This community was up in arms about the shooting and the killing of black motorists
mm-hmm.
By the hands of some police officers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as a result, when I first brought it up, now, mind you, it was a majority Democratic council.
Right.
The vote failed when I brought it up. It failed 9-2.
Mm.
I had to beg for my seat for a vote from another district council person just to not leave me out there. And, that's what happened. It failed 9-2.
What was the reason behind that?
Folks didn't want to do it for whatever the political reason or otherwise. They didn't
and
want
these
to.
These are Democrats.
Yeah. So, get this. It came back up. And I want to say, it was under Republican leadership. We were, for the first time, in a minority, 6-5.
Mm-hmm.
And I got it to pass 11-1.
You weren't mayor pro tem then because
no,
it was 6-5, right?
I was a district representative.
Right.
And I remember the battles I had to go through in order to create it and make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, by that time,
what year was this about?
I was mayor. That would have been around 95.
Right. Okay. Because I remember, because I went to the meetings, the first start of these meetings.
The interesting thing about it, though, the week before the vote,
mm-hmm.
I said it would be tragic if something were to happen between now and next Monday. And don't you know
something happened.
That a woman by the name of Florence Bedeker
mm-hmm.
was shot and killed right over on State Street by the railroad tracks?
Mm-hmm.
When I tell you Charlotte was about to become an L.A.,
hmm.
and that we needed something, no matter what it looked like in its form,
we right.
needed something to put the citizen's voice in the process,
right.
because the problem was that the citizen's voice was out of
out
the process.
Of process, right.
You had police officers investigating themselves. So the question was, okay, why are you going to have the fox guarding the hen?
Yeah,
right?
It was just like Knapp Commission and
right.
whatnot.
So that's how it got to be.
Right.
What it is. So I had to get something passed, and we did get something.
And everybody, most of them realized they needed something passed.
Right. Now it still needed a lot of teeth,
mm-hmm.
which brings us forward to your comments today.
Right,
right now, the board in itself allows for the city manager and even a police chief to be able to do things at their own discretion.
Mm-hmm.
City manager has the final say in what happens. Mind you, it has to get to the Citizens Review Board first.
Right.
Somebody has to appeal it.
Right.
A decision prior of, you know, to going through some other processes before it even gets to a Citizens Review Board. The citizens today would like to see something that is much stronger, in the way of having some subpoena power, in the way of a couple of other measures that will allow them to be able to say that this is much stronger than what it is. Now, if that happens, one of the things I had to tussle with back then was the appointment process, because the stronger you make a board sometimes, counsel is going to be very conscious.
Well, it's got to be an independent board, first of all. It's got to be an independent board, right?
But what Skippy does.
Mm-hmm.
What concerns me is that you won't have your atypical citizen on that board. Because the city council could say, you know what, if this is how they want to go, and they want to start investigating themselves, okay, they want to have that authority, they want to have subpoena power as well, then we need some people who understand law enforcement.
Yeah,
we need some lawyers on here. We need some criminologists on
board. So is it a citizen review board now?
So now, one could argue, and I could agree, that when a person commits a crime, sometimes, like in the Trayvon Martin case,
Right.
A lot of those people sometimes are homemakers. They are engineers. They might be, you know, a labor.
Lawyers' wives. Lawyers' wives.
The whole nine. Right.
Right.
So, and so one could say, we could just be like a jury acting on the same evidence. Now, whether a city council would buy that or not, it's almost like dealing with the airport. You kind of want people who, you know, understand what's going on with the airport in some capacity or another. But that's something that, that could be out there. So we want to be careful that in as much as citizens are asking for this to be strengthened, that they aren't seeing themselves out of being appointed to that board.
Well, yeah. The thing is that, see, first of all, you need how many members of the board is going to be.
Right.
See, so, and to my way of thinking is we talked about this on my show for the last 2 weeks about the Trayvon Martin and Zimmerman case, and it's a tragedy from all different walks. Sure. But the problem is that with a citizen review board, you need people that understand the law on the board. But you also need a citizen that is conscientious enough to read up about the law.
Right.
Not just someone who, I'm here because I got nothing else to do. So, and then how do you determine who that person is?
Well, and the other
See?
Thing too, yeah.
Right.
There are politics in everything.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
So, that said, there are politics among the members of the board.
Absolutely.
Which could ask the question, so look, I don't know that you can almost blame the city council for the number of cases that have been heard or not heard.
Right.
As much as you got to look to the board and find out who has what type of coalitions where.
Absolutely.
See, all I want at the end of the day is what you just said a moment ago. You need to have people who are going to be objective and balanced.
And balanced.
About how they look at information and determine what should or should not happen, regardless of it's for the citizen or for the police officer. Or against the citizen, or against the police officer. You have to have people that are balanced in their approach and their thinking as they look over all this information that's coming before them so that they can render a good decision.
Well, it's almost like the council review we have here.
Or the best in the state.
Right. Yeah, and it needs to be an independent body. Well, even the city council can't say, no, we don't want that. They should not have any, in, to my best estimation, should not have the say. They can maybe select or appoint who they feel should be on it, but they should be out of it after that. And the Citizen Review Board should have the last word besides a judge. And
or the city manager in this case.
Right, city manager. Now, the thing is, though, it also depends on who that city manager is. So now you get back again into the politics end of it, and because the city manager works for the city council. So now, to me, I don't think city manager should be a part of that. I think it should be a separate, just like they have in New York City. That citizen review board don't answer to nobody. I mean, and really, that's the only way to be fair.
Right.
And I want to get in. Matter of fact, so this is going to be a two-part interview because you have done more in your short time in Charlotte that we have time to do in our conversation.
2 hours.
Well, we can do 2 hours. hey, probably by 8 hours. So the thing is, because I told you it would only be an hour, and I just want to wrap this up, and then we'll have another conversation, because it's got to be, for people to understand who Patrick Cannon is,
yes, sir.
It can't be done in an hour. It needs to be done a little more than that. And so, but I wanted to wrap up this portion of it. Housing.
Yes.
I know, now, as I said, I'm on the board of Lady Constellation.
Yes.
And that whole area is completely different.
Double Oaks.
Right. It's, I mean, they got houses that are going up there, I believe, at $200,000. They're going to have, I think, 700 single-family homes, and they have apartments. I mean, it's a yuppie. It's becoming that. One, people have asked me, where do those people go that were living there? Because they can't afford that.
About like Wilmore and Wesley Heights.
Yeah.
Where do they go? Well, they go where they can find the price point for their budget.
Mm-hmm.
And I will tell you that we are some 15,000 plus units away from the need that must be met.
Okay.
We have a housing trust fund board that helps us to be able to put money toward different type developments to address those who have a need for affordable housing. The other thing that we have to do is to work more in unison with the Housing Authority, the Charlotte Housing Authority. They have a new director over there, Mr. Fulton Meacham, who's doing an extraordinary job. He really is. We have to find a way to create, in my opinion, more mixed-use developments, much like what now exists in the Fabio Homes,
right.
The park at Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
People say, well, how much are those units? Believe it or not, as low as $75, as high as $1,600.
Mm.
And all those folks are living together in one community with nobody questioning who is paying how much for what, be it a public housing unit or be it a market rate unit. It's just not happening.
When you live next to somebody that's got their lawn cut, you want your lawn cut.
You do. And it's turned out very well.
Yeah.
I've been honored to be, you know, part of some of the Hope 6 applications in the past, like at Arbor Glen. It used to be Dalton Village, where, you know, monies have been applied from the federal government to help bring about that type of housing. You see what's going on in Piedmont Courts. You see what's happening, what has happened already with First Ward Place. It used to be Earl Village.
Mm-hmm.
You have a place now called the Renaissance, which used to be Boulevard Homes.
Mm-hmm.
It's at West Boulevard and Billy Graham Parkway.
Mm-hmm.
So, to your question, we have to keep, I think, finding ways to create housing in areas where we least expect to see it happen.
Right.
Because what we don't want to do, in my opinion, is to put it in areas where it's overly concentrated.
Well, absolutely right. And when I said lawns before, I mean, you don't have to have a lawn to keep your house clean and the outside of your house clean.
Right.
And people who see other people, it's monkey see, monkey do. I mean, you're not going to have a dump yard outside your house normally if next door is clean.
That's true.
And that's all it is. But I want to stop it here and have you give us your pitch for why you want to be mayor. I'm going to ask you it again anyway the next interview, but why?
You know something, I am... Patrick Cannon is a native Charlottean. He's a husband. He's a father. A businessman of 15 years. An experienced servant leader in the areas of being a district representative once upon a time, an at-large representative, and mayor pro tem. Already serving in the capacity, doing a lot of different things as mayor in my title as mayor pro tem.
Mm-hmm.
Bottom line, I can deliver on the issues. I have a proven track record of doing so. I want to encourage people to go to canonformayor.com to look at the level of works and deeds that not this politician, but that this servant leader has put into place.
Mm-hmm.
I can and I do listen to all sides. We need somebody who will do that across the board to be able to move the city forward. I've been an advocate for change,
mm-hmm.
and change indeed is what has happened. All one has to do, again, is to look at the record, and it will show what's happened relative to economic development, public safety, transportation, housing, and even a comprehensive transportation plan.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is I can make tough decisions. I have made tough decisions when they hadn't been very popular among some of my colleagues, but they had to be made for the betterment of the people. They ended up getting it. Maybe didn't want to go the route we went, but it made sense. It made common sense. And we need someone who will exercise fiscal prudence. I'm very conscious as a businessman about making sure that we run our city businesslike. And it scares me to know that we could have someone there that may not run it in that form or fashion. And the last thing I want us to be is Detroit. We do not need to be bankrupt. So having someone with a level of common sense, business sense, and community sense to ensure that all of Charlotte is being taken care of and represented is the thing I want to do. And it's what we will do if given the opportunity to represent these fine people of the city of Charlotte.
Well, you know, we also need to have someone that knows what's in a bill and can answer the question of what's in a bill.
Yes, sir.
We didn't have that with the present governor because the city council and Mayor Pro Tem were running the city. So he didn't have to know anything. So, we will, we're going to stop it right here, and we will be back next week with the part two of candidate Patrick Cannon, who is our Mayor Pro Tem in Charlotte.
Yes, sir. Looking forward to it. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
That was Patrick Cannon, Mayor Pro Tem, Charlotte, North Carolina, who is running and is a candidate for the mayor of the city of Charlotte. And it covers Mecklenburg County. Please, don't let anybody tell you. Just like Bloomberg. Bloomberg isn't just the mayor of New York City, which is five boroughs, which is huge, but he is the only mayor that you hear in the state of North Carolina. And it's the same thing. I mean, he's the only mayor you hear in the state of New York, besides the governor. The mayor of Charlotte is just like Mayor Bloomberg. He's the only mayor that you hear about in the state of North Carolina that can and will make a difference. Okay, what we're going to do right now is we have a great thing going here. I'm going to run out of here like the wind as soon as this is over with, because it's going to be coming. It's Seussico the Musical down at the Booth Theater tonight at 7 o'clock. Again, tickets are $5 for kids, $15 for adults. You know, and I kept saying that. I don't know if I even have that down here. Let me look in here. Do I have that? Yes, it's a 5 to 12 years of age. It's $5. And $15 for adults. So kids under 5, get in free. So you can catch it tonight at 7 o'clock at the Booth, or you can catch it twice tomorrow, 2 o'clock and 7 o'clock. And I will be looking forward to seeing you for the ticket. Just ask for me, Michael Lawson. All right, for your listening pleasure, this is just a taste of what you are going to hear tonight. Seussico the Musical. And remember, a person's a person, no matter how small.
your hat. I wonder what's on your hat, such as that. It could be a creature. They call it a bat, who bounds with stains on his head, cut it flat. Or a striped-loving pipester from up and out back. Or a sort of, kind of, cat-wearing cat.
Why? Thank you. Mike Sales. I'm here to do an interview with Mike Lawson, who is the host of this show. Ms. Lawson, are you there? So, yeah, I'm here to promote our play that's happening this evening at the Booth Playhouse. It's called Seussical. And we're putting it on with the Notre School of Arts. This is the culmination of our summer program that's been going on for 6 weeks. This summer program we call the STI, which stands for Summer Theater Intensive. And we basically take kids who don't often get an opportunity to experience performing arts, or who don't get it taught to them at a high level. We take them and we bring them in a
professional. I think we got it fixed now, Michael. We have it fixed now.
I can hear you. I can hear you now also.
Okay, good. Okay. So tell us. Keep going.
Okay, so basically I was just outlining who we are and what we do. Like I was saying, we have a six-week summer program called the Summer Theater Intensive, where we take local Charlotte kids who don't get a chance to experience performing arts education. And for 6 weeks, we give them an intense professional education. They rehearse a play that they learn from beginning to end. We teach them at the Carolina Actors Studio Theater in NOTA. And then at the end of the 6 weeks, they perform a live Broadway play. Tonight, they'll be doing that play. It's called Seussical, and it's going to be at the Booth Playhouse at 7 o'clock. And we hope basically everybody who can hear me who has any interest in performing arts or nonprofit activity or theater to come out and support this show.
And, you know, the thing is, it's great about this is that the kids are going to love the show, but I'm telling you, the adults are going to love this show because it is fun. It's fun for a Saturday night, especially if you come with your kids. But I tell you what, I'm not bringing any kids there tonight. And I saw the rehearsals. Each rehearsal got better. I was at the last rehearsal, which was done in front of many of the kids for free who are in the summer school programs and the YMCA and et cetera. And it was amazing. As I was telling Kelly, our great director, she said, you know, we were worried about this and that. And I told her, Kelly, you know, you have been with this for every hour of every day, seeing these kids go from here, A to B. I come in and I'm looking at it, and I think they've gone from A to Z in 2 days. Because I can tell the difference. You can't tell the difference. But I can tell the difference because I have seen it three different times now, and they have gotten 1,000% better every time. And
I think you raise a couple key points. Number one, this is a good show for an entire family. This will be a good activity for any family, parents that want to bring their kids. Especially because it's Seussical, which is basically a musical based on Dr. Seuss classic stories. Everybody loves Dr. Seuss. Everybody knows The Cat in the Hat and things like that.
And Horton. Imagine Horton.
And Horton, exactly, all rolled into a play. So it's a great activity on that level for anybody, for an entire family. I would also say... you picked up on something that's very key. It is amazing to watch what happens to these kids in 6 weeks, how they go from just regular kids with some talent and potential, and through the work that Kelly and some of our other staff is able to do with them, they turn out a professional play. The kids fall in love with theater and performing arts. If you come tonight, you'll see exactly what happens when you hold kids to high standards, you pour yourself into them, you teach them, and you just give them some discipline. You can experience an incredible show tonight and see it all happen right before your eyes.
And at the Booth Theater tonight, 7 o'clock, it's $5 for kids 5 to 12, $15 for adults, and kids that are under 5, it's free. And that's tomorrow?
Yeah.
The same time at 2 o'clock, right?
Tomorrow we have two shows, one at 2 o'clock and one at 7 o'clock. Same address, Booth Playhouse, 130 North Tryon, same prices.
Absolutely. And so I'm going to be all there, and I let the people know that if they bring the kids 5 to 12, they can see me. Everyone that asks for me, they will get a ticket from me. So come.
Ask for Mike Lawson, you get a ticket for free
that's
from Mike Lawson.
That's correct. You ask for me, and you'll get a ticket. Okay, I'm talking to you while I'm getting dressed. So I'm going to see. I'm going to run out of here as fast as I can with Horton and be down there before 7.
Just, all right. Well, I'll see you
sure
down
there. That just make sure that they know me at the entrance.
Okay, that's fine. I'll see you down there.
Okay, be down there about 2:45.
Okay, I'll see you.
Talk to you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. That was the chair of the board of the Notre School of the Arts, which I am a member of. And you got to see this. It is so great. It is so great. Right now we have another outstanding person who is actually in the middle of a three-ring circus in North Carolina. Because we have the Senate, we got the House, and we got the governor, which, as I said at the beginning of the show, that's a three-ring circus. And the master of ceremonies is Art Polk, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, how are you doing, Michael?
Fine, how are you?
Good, I'm sorry I got caught up with a bunch of business today, and I'm hoping my friend and I hope that Ben will be able to call in. We were together earlier and gave me your number.
Okay, good.
Right now, we're just happy the General Assembly is out. It's a three-ring circus with nothing but elephants.
But the problem is the elephants are dancing around like they have mice on the floor.
I mean, that would imply that they're afraid. I mean, I know what they're afraid of, Michael. They're afraid of the future. They're afraid this country's changing. And instead of embracing change, they're trying to figure out how they can control the country in some kind of quasi-apartheid state where where a minority controls. I mean, how
well, you know, that is
funny.
Yes, good. Quasi-apartheid. That is I need to write that down. Quasi-apartheid. That's a good analogy.
I mean, how do you explain what they're doing? They're trying to basically disenfranchise people. They're resorting and resegregating schools by doing backdoor methodologies where charter schools were intended to be innovative workshops to actually augment and help public education, not, you know, essentially drain public education and be a parasite. You know,
well, I mean,
everything they do.
You saw what the. Go ahead.
Go on.
You saw what the last chief of the school system in, was it Indiana? Then he ran out of there and went to Florida. Mr. Tony Bennett, and I don't mean the singer. I mean, they come to find out that he wanted to make the charter school so good, and he had one particular school that was going to be up for as the head of what the glory that everybody should reach for, and he only got a C grade, and all three-quarters of the money went to them to prove that it could work, and he changed the scores to give it an A so they could get money, and the people just found out about it now. That happened a year ago. And now he's in Florida. When they found out about it, even Rick Scott told him he had to go. So Rick Scott elected him as the chief of education in Florida. I mean, that was only 2 weeks ago. And now he had to resign last night. So, you know, this thing about getting rid of the charter schools are good when you have a situation where everybody can go. We're not going to make charter schools for the elite. And it just shows you it hasn't worked because they had to change the scores. They changed the scores because when they did the scores of everything that this man, Tony Bennett, set up, it didn't fall. It fell as a C minus. It didn't even come to it. And they couldn't get more funding unless they were an A, but they were so sure they were going to get an A. So who's the head of the school system in North Carolina is a Democrat, correct?
June Atkinson, yes. She's still elected.
So that's right. So it's not an appointment, which is, thank God. But the problem is she can't do anything because they're cutting the funding for the schools. We're now below Mississippi. Now, we went from third place to 47th place in the United States in 6 months. How is that even possible, Mr. Chairman?
Well, it's possible to lose ground. I can't speak to the numbers you're citing, but I can speak to the fact that we don't have to wonder where we are in a lot of metrics. We're at the bottom. I mean,
I don't even have to think about looking it up.
They're moving in the wrong direction. But, it's not just education investment, which when businesses and companies are looking to come to North Carolina or expand, they're doing it because we had a great community college system, we had invested in higher education, and we were doing our best to do our jobs with primary and secondary education and programs like Smart Start and early childhood development.
Right.
By defunding all of those and by essentially diluting the quality of life and diluting the investment or defunding the investment in the people, businesses take a second look. Do they want to be in a state that doesn't honor these things? And you can see right now that in the last 30 months, since the Republicans are taking control of the legislature in January of 2011, so before McCrory and now with McCrory, they've slipped out of the top 10, Insight Magazine and other business metrics for people wanting to come and locate and move to North Carolina. Now, we at one time were number one, then we were number three, number four. But if you're slipping out of the top 10 and going in the wrong direction, I don't see how they can hang their hat and say, hey, we've done a great job. I think they've done a miserable job.
Of course, but these are the numbers. They are now ranked 47th. We are now ranked 47th as a school system, but it happened in 6 months because they took all the – how much funding? $1 billion out of the school system so far? I mean, how the heck do you operate? They don't care. This is the problem. This is – and I think we talked about this before. It's the snake with the head cut off, but the snake's body will still wiggle – for a little while. This is what they're doing.
It is what they're doing.
They're dead,
and apparently
they don't know it. They're dead and they don't know it.
They don't know that they're dead in the future. I mean, they're trying desperately to fight that off.
Right. Okay. Absolutely correct. Fight the future. Absolutely. That was a song back in the 60s, Fight the Future. And this is what these guys are doing. It's just incredible. Now, since they can't do any more damage because they're off for the next 15 months, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Is it 15
right.
months they're off? They don't come back to
it. They're off until, not 15 months. I mean, they're off till next May. So.
Right. Oh, okay. So. Well,
they could always call a special session, and let's just hope they don't try that trick.
Well, what other stuff is left? I mean, when you say they can call a special session, Art Polk can call a special session. Because Art could make some calls,
but, I mean, Tom, the speaker could call a special session. I mean, they did it before.
Well, yeah. After he gets the call from Art Polk.
Right.
I don't think
you and I called, they're going to have a special session, no.
You don't think so, huh?
We're not on speed dial.
Not on speed dial. Well, that's fine. Well, the thing is that I wonder if our famous or infamous governor is going to come back and live in his county. Or is he going to stay up there? You think he'll come back and live in for a couple of months here in Charlotte? I bet you he doesn't.
That'd be a very good question. He certainly ran as a moderate mayor of Charlotte, which we knew he wasn't.
Right.
And he has done a lot of things that if I was a citizen of Charlotte and Mecklenburg, I would be very displeased with. You know.
Yes.
I guess what he'll do is he'll bake a bunch of cookies and bring them to you, Michael. Which is what he did with those women.
Right. I remember that. Isn't that funny?
He did that this week. He decided he would go across the street with a Praetorian guard protecting him from the women protesting and bring them a plate of cookies, which was very nice of the governor, except they don't want cookies. They want the right to choose, and they want good education, and they want, you know, investments in early childhood development, not cookies.
Well, and besides that, they weren't freshly baked. They were from one of Art Pope's stores. So, you know.
Now, what's really funny is, you know, the last time I can recall a leader, although she wasn't elected, you know, you can remember the famous saying, you know, let them eat cake.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
She ended up being a victim of the French Revolution. Perhaps he'll be a victim of the Moral Monday
too.
Revolution.
Well, I mean, as I said, the head is already cut off, and the snake is still moving its body because it doesn't have a brain to tell it it's dead. It's just like the governor when he said he never read the bill, but he signed it anyway. And we have a problem here that needs to I hope it's getting across to the millions of people, because I don't know if he won that much. He won by 7 points or 5 points, so he won by a majority, a very good majority. But the problem is that a lot of those people who voted for him, they were Democrats, because they thought it was a better deal, because we knew him, we knew he's moderate. So he's not, and he said, one word answer, what are you going to do about abortion? Any new laws? Nope. And that was his answer. And he gave an answer in the middle of the night when they voted for that atrocious abortion bill. So what do we have to do now? While these regressive autocrats are sleeping and they're not making bills appear. What can we do as a Democratic Party and as a voter? What can we do to help you?
Well, I think the most important thing we can do right now is to focus on these municipal elections this fall and use those elections. Here's what you should be doing, we should be doing. We should be asking the elected local Republican officials, what do you think about what's been going on in the General Assembly? And they're going to give some answers and say, well, you know, you're a Republican, you must endorse this. And when they try to say, oh, no, that's not me, say, no, wait a minute. You're all part of the same team. What is it about what they don't do that you don't like? Tell us. Force the issue on the local Republicans in every county.
And
make them answer to this agenda.
Aren't they hiding now? We can no longer find out how they voted on a particular bill. I think they tried to pass a bill. If not, they might have passed it, where we can no longer find how they voted on a particular bill. It just gives the either they all voted or they didn't all vote. They're not doing an individual count anymore. I don't know. We have another caller right here. Let's see who this is. Hello, caller.
Well, that seems brazen. I mean,
hello, caller. We have another caller there, Cameron. Who's this?
This is Dr. Benjamin Chavis.
Dr. Benjamin Chavis, it is our honor to have you on the phone. You're on with the chairman of the Democratic Party in North Carolina.
Yes, Rand is a very close friend of mine. I'm a strong supporter of it. I'm a Democrat myself, and I support the North Carolina Democratic Party.
We were just talking about what we need to do. What did you think about the Moral Mondays?
Well, I'm a strong supporter of the Moral Mondays. I think they raised the issues of the contradictions of the backwardness the Republicans have taken the great state of North Carolina backwards and have not gone forward at all. And I think Maura Munger has raised the moral objections, but we also have to raise the political objections, the economic right. objections, the social objections, the cultural objections. This has been devastating to the state of North Carolina, and it's going to have a negative impact for years to come, unless the people stand up and demand a change. I think the people of North Carolina have the last say, not the legislature. And I think that we have to have now the people to redress the members of the legislature and to challenge them for the backwardness that they have done.
Well, you know, you were born here in North Carolina, and was it in Oxford?
Yes, I'm a native of Oxford, North Carolina, and, you know, I'm planning to move back to North Carolina full-time, and I certainly will be out there helping to not just reawaken people, but to get people involved at the municipal level, the county level, to begin to make a change. I don't think that these changes that Republicans have done are permanent. I think this is temporary backwardness, and I think we have to have a widespread statewide movement to put North Carolina back on a better progressive footing.
Well, I have been saying that I believe this is the first time since Reconstruction that North Carolina has been taken over by the regressive party, and as I call them, in 2008, when we had the first black elected to president of the United States, I believe, and I'd like to get your feel on that a lot of people thought, well, we did it, we hit the mountaintop. And there's now going to be a chicken in every pot. And they did nothing to turn the fire on to warm the water to boil the chicken or to put the chicken on the grill. I mean, you just can't have a chicken there and expect the chicken to cook itself.
Well, first of all, I think to review what has gone on the last 8 years is very important. In 2008, I was so proud of my home state, North Carolina, voting for the election of President Barack Obama. But what happened, there was a reaction to 2008. So by the time 2012 came, most the North Carolinians that went to the polls, there were more people that voted for Romney in North Carolina than in for Obama. And that's the problem. And I think that you know, politics is never permanent, and this is my point, that we have to respond today in light of what happened yesterday. We can't paralyze ourselves today because of what happened yesterday. We have to respond. We have to be active. And it seems to me what the legislature did in 2013 demands a response from the people of North Carolina, the progressives, the blacks, the whites, the Latinos, the Asians, the Native Americans, all we want. Freedom, justice, and equality for all North Carolinians. It's our time now to respond.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is quite profound what you say. What do you feel that just the coalition of the of African Americans and Hispanics and Asians to stand up and do more than they did in 2008, which had never been done before, and we need that coalition of white Democrats to help us get across the line. And it seems like that everybody dropped out in 2010, and that's why we're in the position we are right now here in North Carolina.
Well, I think it's the adage and the lesson that we should always remember. When you win a victory, that victory has to be protected. We won a victory in 2008, but we did not protect the victory in 2010. We did not protect the victory in 2012, and we did not protect the victory in 2013. So now we have to roll up our sleeves and win again, but next time we win, we have to protect that victory. We have to strengthen the Democratic Party in North Carolina. We have to strengthen progressive politics. politics in North Carolina. And we have to strengthen what I would call progressive economics, because part of the problem is, why is it the Republicans, at least perceptually, have the money? I don't think the Democratic Party should just be the party of the have-nots. The Democratic Party also has to be the party of people who become empowered economically, politically, culturally, socially. We need to be building our communities, housing development, progressive development. I see so much opportunity in my home state, and I want us to stop whining and get to work.
I don't think it can be said. I can't add anything to that. Mr. Chairman, can you add anything to that?
I heard that, yes. It's very similar to a line that I say, it's time to stop whining and start winning.
Yes.
We have a bad habit of finding fault with each other and picking nits with each other as opposed to fighting our opponents. And what Ben's talking about is that we have to be willing to take risks and be willing to be successful and spread prosperity around. One of the problems that we have is the old crab pot theory, that if you ever pull a crab out of a pot, they all grab each other. They don't want anyone to get ahead. And, the Republicans exploit that. We have to try to put out what I consider a prosperity message to get everyone ahead. And really, the jobs and economic development component of it is the key thing. McCrory and the legislature have not done a lot to create jobs. They've been shedding jobs. They've been cutting jobs. The Democratic Party and our affiliates have to be willing to get behind good, old-fashioned job programs. You know, putting people to work, fixing the infrastructure of the state is not sexy, but actually it creates jobs, and it creates prosperity, and it makes our quality of life better.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. Chavis, since you are, and you were, I should say, the former head of the NAACP, what do you think about the job that our chair here, our president here in North Carolina, is doing?
Reverend Dr. William Barber, I believe, is doing a great job as the chairman and president of the NAACP in North Carolina. And I think his idea of the Monday's demonstrations were correct. And, I think but we must not stop there. I think we need the NAACP, we need all of our organizations. I'm still a proud card-carrying member of the NAACP. And I look forward to when I move back to North Carolina to working with Reverend Barber and all of the branches of the NAACP. My man, Kojo, is the president of the NAACP there in Charlotte. So I'm looking forward. But I think what we need to do, I want to go back and just express my support for what Randy just said. But we do need economic prosperity. We do need economic development. And we need the Democratic Party to help provide the opportunities for brothers and sisters who have been shut out of the economics of North Carolina to be not just involved, but to be involved in a way that creates economic empowerment, economic development. I think too often we see politics on one end of the spectrum and economics on the other end of the spectrum. But we must co-join economics with politics to create a progressive economic development, progressive political development in the state of North Carolina.
Well, I think what you said is, what you just said is so unbelievably true that, this is just the curtain has just been drawn down a little bit, but we can see the light through the curtain. And all it takes for us to get over to the curtain and pull the string and pull it up. This is, North Carolina has always been a progressive state. I mean, we slipped this time in 2010 and 2012, but it's not going to happen another year, because the people who thought that it wasn't going to be them who were going to be involved in getting stripped of their rights it's just going to be those other people. They now see that they have fallen in the same lot with those other people. There is nothing they can do but now help bail when they're in that boat with water coming on.
Right. Listen to me share with you, dear brother. I get a lot of emails, texts from younger Democrats who are now joining. One of the things that I'm optimistic about, even in this discussion of how devastating the Republicans have been, but what my optimism comes from is that I see young people across the state of North Carolina who not only feel that what the Republicans just did is insulting, but it hurts them in life. And I think the generation of young voters who come, and if you look back what happened in 2008, it was the young voter, it was the new voter, it was the progressive voter that made the difference. And what we have to do now is rebuild that coalition and get that demographic much more actively involved in the local chapters, the local units of the Democratic Party. I would like to see young Democrats, and I don't mean the young Democrats as an association, I'm talking about young Democrats as voters, move
right
up into the party and provide new leadership and join the kind of direction that Randy is offering now.
Well, we are at the end of our hour, and Dr. Chavis is so glad to speak to you, have you on my show. And this, the last time I saw you, I believe you were at the Harvey Gantt Theater, and I interviewed you.
Yes.
And
yes.
When are you going to, you don't know, is it going to be shortly during the next race? When do you think you'll be moving back?
Hopefully within the next 6 months. I'm in North Carolina right now, actually. I'm heading to my home in Oxford, and Randy was so nice enough to give me the number so I could call into the show. But listen, I would like to stay in touch with you and keep up your good work. I think this program is needed. It's like beating a drum. We need more of this drum beat throughout the state.
Absolutely.
As we rally people, as we mobilize people, as we organize people, and we take back our state.
Absolutely. And thank you, Dr. Chavis, for coming on. And Mr. Chairman, as always, it's been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure, Michael, and I was happy to bring my friend Ben on the show. We'd love to see you in person again. Keep up the good work in Charlotte and across the state.
Well, as soon as Dr. Chavis moves back here, maybe we can get together, have lunch or something, you know, just give me a call. And Dr. Chavis, you have my number. Ben can give you Randy can give you my number, my home number, and you just give me a call anytime.
All right, very good. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you guys.
All right,
that was Dr. Ben Chavis and Chairman of the Democratic Party, Mr. Randy Bola. And I got to get out of here. And talking about that three-ring circus, get down to see Seussical the Musical. And don't forget, we have our own three-ring circus, the State House, the Senate, and the Governor's Mansion. And it's being conducted by Mr. Art Pope, Master of Ceremonies. Okay, I got to get out of here. Go and see Seussical the Musical. Bye.
The whistle blows as he makes his rounds. He's seen every town west of Mississippi. Just a face painted on a smile, jumping up and down and making people happy. So deep inside, and keep the people laughing. But no one knows that beneath the curtain, and has turned up nose, left a lonely beggar. They bring the curtain down. Life is a free ring circuit, all of the ups and downs of a carousel that I know so well. Life is a free ring circuit, just
Trevor Lair.